right, and good morning, beloveds. Are you able to hear me okay? All right, yes, good morning. Thank you, Ken. The music has been really, really perfect this morning. A lot of focus on who we really are. I do take note that our attendance is down a little bit this morning because of the weather that, you know, this storm that is currently brewing out on the East Coast, and I happen to be out in Georgia, so we are experiencing a lot of migration, from Florida, and also we're in the path of that. So I just wanted to start this morning by just holding a very clear, loving, accepting space and deep gratitude for grace and what is, for the people or anyone who may be affected by the weather that is at hand. So with that said, as Ken mentioned, today is Mystery Minister, and our mystery minister for the month of September is Reverend Helen Avery. So, Helen, I'm going to turn this mic over to you to bring us the sharing for today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Gloria. Thank you, Reverend Gloria. And thank you. Thank you, Ken. Yes, good morning. I'm just checking everyone can hear me. I'm wearing a earpiece with a mic. So, oh, great. Okay. Yeah, good morning. I hope everyone is well. Or if not well, then at peace this morning. We're going to be talking a bit about the simplicity of being in the now, of just being in awareness of the very present moment. But before we do all that, I actually wanted to start with our statement of purpose before we have our opening song. So just a reminder for those of us who may have forgotten. So we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self within an appearance of many faiths, many cults, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And that's why we've also come here this morning to discern one truth and rest in its embrace. So I'm going to drop the mic and hand you over to Ken, who is going to play. He's our DJ, our maestro this morning. So I'll drop the mic so we can all greet one another and share the peace and listen to our song. Thanks.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here, melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love. Chidananda, oh,
From all over, it looks like, but no, obviously no one from Florida. I think there's like 420,000 homes without power, and as Gloria says, they're holding them in our prayers this morning. So we're going to start with some announcements for you for this week. Okay. So Awakening Together is offering a Awakening Together is offering a 4-week class on the Tao Te Ching that begins on Thursday, September the 28th. Reverend Jane McCormack will facilitate that class, and it's going to be held in the evening on Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, which is 4:30 p.m. Eastern, and it uses Stephen Mitchell's translation of the Tao. So Barb has put up the link there. For those of you who don't know, Stephen Mitchell is Byron Katie's husband, and his translation of the Tao has been reviewed as having great clarity and lucidity. There are many, many translations of the Tao, but his is really, really clear. Stephen Mitchell describes the Taoist master as a man or woman whose life is in perfect harmony with the way things are. How lovely. That is exactly what the Tao teaches. Acceptance, appreciation for things as they are, which we'll be touching on a little today. The Tao also shows that the power of correction lies in this deep acceptance. So if you want to learn more about this class, you can click on the link that Barb just posted, or you can go to awakening-together.org, click retreats and classes, and then look under the classes menu. So yeah, Jay is facilitating that class. I've done that class, and it's beautiful. Secondly, we're nearing mid-September already. Can you believe it? And October is a big month for retreats. So our friends at ACM Gather and Open Minds are offering a retreat in North Carolina from October 5th to 8th. And Regina is going to be one of the speakers there, along with John Mundy, John Mark Stroud, Jennifer Hadley, and several others. And then Awakening Together's annual fall retreat is just a couple of weeks later in Colorado Springs. That's with Regina, Gina Lake, Tess Hughes, and Bob Ferguson. And the links are just there from Bob. So there's still room at the Weekend of Freedom retreat in North Carolina. That was October 5th to 8th. And there's room at all three Awakening Together retreats in Colorado Springs towards the end of October. So you can get details about both retreats by, again, going to awakening-together.org and clicking retreats and classes, and then looking under the retreat menu. And there are special discounts for the Awakening Together retreat. The best one is if you sign up for all three retreats. But there's also another great discount for Awakening Together members if you sign up for the retreat with Regina or the one with Bob and Tess. So be sure to check out those discounts when you're looking online on the site at the retreat information. And then finally, tonight is our quarterly member meeting. So please attend if you can. If not, the meeting will be recorded and you can listen later on. Regina's going to be updating us on a lot of things that are going on in Awakening Together this evening. So we're going to hear the latest regarding the fall retreat that I just mentioned and the Retreat House fundraising campaign. She's also going to share information about our plans for a pilgrimage to Israel in October 2018. And she's also going to ask for feedback regarding our new website. Don't know if many of you have had a chance to check out the new website. Also feedback regarding the sanctuary's open hours and the sanctuary's programming. So a great chance if you have something you want to share, please come to that quarterly member meeting this evening. She also has an exciting announcement about Awakening Together Radio. So please join us tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, that's 5 p.m. Pacific, for the member meeting. And that's right after Regina's Seven Steps teaching and before our new weekly satsang with Craig Holiday. So, member meeting tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. And I think that's it in the array of announcements. And Barb's put the schedule online there, so you can check that out. So now we're going to have a song, Holy Now, that Ken's going to play for us. And we'll be back right after. So thanks, Ken.
Sunday we would go to church and pay attention to the priest. He would read the holy word and consecrate the holy bread, and everyone would kneel and bow. Today the only difference is everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. Moses split the sea in two, and Jesus made the water wine. And I remember feeling sad, miracles don't happen still. But now I can't keep track, 'cause everything's a miracle. Everything, everything, everything's a miracle. So the challenging thing becomes not to look for miracles, but finding where there isn't one. When holy water was rare at best, it barely wet my fingertips. But now I have to hold my breath, like I'm swimming in a sea of it. To be a world half there, heaven's second rain hand me down, but I walk it with a reverent air, 'cause everything is holy now. Church let out, how things have changed since then. Everything is holy now. It used to be a world half there, heaven's second rate hand me down, but I walk it with a reverent air, 'cause everything is holy. Thank you.
yeah, I just loved that song, and I thought it was apt for this morning, as we're going to talk about the simplicity of just of awakening, and it's just in the now. So I'm really grateful to be here and be with you all this morning. It's so nice to see many familiar names. It's been a while as I sort of took a pause in being in the sanctuary with the Tao Te Ching. And it's really lovely to come back. I've missed a few weekends as well as I've been away. I just saw that Lynn is in Florida. So our prayers are with you, Lynn, and sending you much peace at this time. So we're just going to begin with a prayer and what I call a consecration, which is really just making holy our time together, but of course it is already holy. So just want to close your eyes where you are and take a deep breath and just exhale, letting it all go. So we give thanks for our community and for coming together this morning. And we offer up our time together, not just for our own healing and clarity and peace, but for the healing, clarity and peace of all beings. And recognize that we are not alone or separate. We are part of something much bigger. And we send our thoughts and prayers to all those who may be anxious today, or suffering, or confused. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be happy. And so it is. Amen. Okay. So I'm really thrilled that Reverend Hal Seeley has agreed to do the reading today. I invite you just to sort of prepare for Hal. I'm sure he'll prepare you all in his own way. But he's going to lead us through almost like a guided meditation almost. So I just invite you to sort of prepare for that by maybe just settling in or getting comfortable or letting go. With great pleasure, I pass you over to Hal. Okay, Hal, letting go of the mic for you.
Good morning, everybody. Can everybody hear me just fine? Yes. Wonderful. And thank you all for being here, and thank you very much, Helen, for your invitation for me to read, which you've chosen for me to read. It's such a lovely thing. And this is from Muji, adapted from an invitation to the What Is. And I'll begin with good morning. Are you ready to come in? Have you taken off your shoes and left them outside? While you're there, leave your mind outside too. What? What do you mean, leave my mind outside? I mean, leave outside all that you think you know about life and about yourself. Leave all thoughts about the past and any memories. Past is past. Leave aside your history. And while you are there, leave aside the future too, for nobody has ever experienced the future. It's just a projection. Put to one side your desires, for instance, the kind of world you want to live in. Leave your ideas and aspirations and hopes. These are all just imagined or come from things we have seen or heard. Leave your person and its world outside. When we are finished here today, you may take them back if you wish. I promise they will be right there where you left them, waiting for you. And leave behind the present moment too, for good measure. We don't need any of these things. And you won't need to create, imagine, or visualize anything. Don't worry, you can't fail. Nor are you required to practice or perform. In fact, you're going to leave aside all effort, so you are empty of all desires and intentions. Leave aside even the desire for enlightenment. Leave all these ideas that we have wrapped around ourselves. There are no new concepts for you here, so don't pick any up either. Just remain as you are, empty, beyond zero, and simply rest in what remains by itself. No next thing to do or undo. Simply be aware as you are right now. Allow some space around this without going to your head. You are here. Recognize you are not holding yourself together or supporting your existence. Notice the endless field of indescribable awareness, just a sense of isness. It is nothing in particular, no expectations. It is just what is. The mind may say, there's nothing here. This is boring. But don't engage with the mind. Feel what it is just to be. You are only to be. This is not an instruction to be carried out. You are not going to be. You already are. Be one with this knowing. From this space, without content or history, I ask you the following questions. Can this what is be confused? Can this what is suffer? Does it have opinions, judgments, or preferences? Did it come from anywhere? Can it hide or be hidden? Did you take any steps to arrive here? Is there a you that is apart from the what is? Was it born? Can it die? Does the what is have a past? This is your true place. If something seems to go out, recognize it is the attention only. But even such a movement occurs, and is recognized in the expanse of the what is. And this ends the reading, and I will turn the mic back over to Reverend Helen.
Thank you so much, Reverend Hal. Thank you. I just so beautifully read. Thank you, Hal. I love this invitation from Muji. It's actually adapted from a much, much longer invitation, and I kind of reworded a couple of things, so it's not as pure as it was when it came from beloved Muji. But I don't know if you follow Muji at all. I know that many of us in the sanctuary often post things that he says, so I'm assuming that many of us are familiar with him. But there's been a bit of a recent shift in his teachings towards this invitation. Probably, you know, in his satsangs and retreats over the last, maybe even less than 6 months, he's been teaching this really simple guidance to connect with ourselves. And sort of move, sort of become aware of ourselves beyond the personal identity, beyond the identity that their ego has of, you know, who we are in the world. And I found it so, so helpful. I wasn't actually a big follower of Muji at all, but I prayed for some guidance and some help around some confusion I was having, and was sort of clearly and unclearly guided towards a few satsangs. I mean, I just seemed to land on them that had this introduction, this invitation, and I found it so, so helpful because it's so simple. It's just when you set aside thoughts of the past, when we set aside all the thoughts of who we are, of our history, of the future, of what we want, of what awakening looks like, when we set aside all of that, just like we're slipping off our shoes, then we come to this place that is already there, which is just incredibly simple. It's not hard. We come to this timeless space, the eternal place. So now is probably the closest we can get the word now to this timeless space. Sometimes we think of eternity as being from now and then for thousands and thousands of years into the future, as far as we can think in terms of time, but that's not eternity. Eternity just means timeless, where there is no past and there is no future. And there is no present either, because present only exists in relation to past or future. But for lack of a better word, we'll use now. So we come to this place of now. You know, one of the challenges we often face on a spiritual path is overcomplication. We have a tendency, and I'm saying we, so I don't know if this is relevant to you, but I know it's relevant to me, and so I'm assuming it's relevant to many of us, that we have a tendency to just complicate our path. And chiefly because we don't seem to be getting where we want to be getting. So we like to fill our lives with practices and as many teachings as we can. And we're often in search of another mantra. So perhaps someone's told us, well, you know, I was initiated in this mantra in the hills of blah, blah in India, and and now I'm promised awakening. We're like, oh my God, I have to get there. I have to get this mantra. Or maybe it's a Buddhist empowerment that we need. I have some good Buddhist friends and they say that it's become like an addiction to them, that they've become addicted to becoming, to going to more and more empowerments of different Buddhas. Or maybe it's another workshop, or another book. I have so many, different books of different paths. And as we know, from being together and awakening together, there's just one truth. So all the time we're sort of overcomplicating it, but there really is just one truth. Another thing we often do is we pressure ourselves to meditating more. So I know that, you know, maybe we start with 20 minutes and then we're like, oh, I really should be doing 30 and then probably an hour and then maybe two. Well, why not four? Well, I guess I could just spend the whole day meditating. And they're really all just mental constructs that we're creating as a distraction to just being in the now, from identifying with what is here and now, with being aware of who we are. So I just wanted to read through a couple or point out a couple of things in this reading for that Hal just read for us. So we're asked really just to leave aside the past. Leave aside the past. And leave aside our aspirations. And what can often arise is when we think about this is, well, that's impossible. How can I possibly let go of my identity and who I am? That's impossible. And then we say, okay, well, I'll come up with a plan. What I'll do is I'll do some purification. every time I notice that I'm thinking about myself, I will go and journal on it. At the end of the day, I'll collect a whole bunch of thoughts about every time I thought about, identified with myself as Helen during the day. And then we end up adding on. Or we think to ourselves, leave aside our aspirations, but if I don't aspire to anything, then what will become of me in this world? How will I be able to support myself or my family if I'm not aspiring? How is that even, how do I exist? And then we think, also we're asked to leave aside the desire for enlightenment. And I don't know about you, but the mind will often say, oh, if you don't desire enlightenment, you don't get enlightened. It's as simple as that. Like, you're never going to wake up unless you really, really desire to wake up. And I know we're often told that, and we'll talk a bit about some of the subtle nuances of these things in a bit. And we feel like there are new concepts to learn, that there's something to be done or undone. Often it's what we have to undo. But what we're guided here is that there is nothing we have to do. There is nothing at all. We don't even have to desire enlightenment, which is sort of mind-boggling. It's just we are what we are looking for naturally. And we can get there not by adding on more practices, more teachings, but by simply shifting our awareness. So these teachings are very similar. It's a non-dual teaching, so they're similar to, you know, it's echoed by Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi actually was the teacher of Muji's teacher. So Rob Adams, Science of Heart, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, many of the practices in that book by Michael Langford, and that Regina teaches are this awareness, watching awareness. So typically, I mean, this is how simple it is. Typically, we are very much engaged in the personality. So, you know, I'll just use myself. So Helen is hoping to move home, and she's needs to plan for her wedding with her partner, and she needs to sit down and meditate, and someone cut her up on the street, and she doesn't like that. She thinks it's disrespectful. She thinks maybe she should flip him the bird or shout something out the window at him to pay him back. And we get very involved in this identity we create for ourselves. But all we have to do is let that ride out and be aware of it. Oftentimes we are aware of it. We're aware of these thoughts as they're arising, sometimes thanks to the practices we do. Of course, it's this sort of, the practices that are useful even though we don't have to practice. So we're sort of identified with this person, but there's also this feeling, this sensation that you're aware, I'm aware that I'm getting angry. I'm aware that this person has annoyed me. I'm aware that I am getting anxious about the things I have to do. I'm aware that I've turned on the news and I'm believing that the world is going to hell in a handbasket. I'm aware of all these things. And then the question becomes, well, what is that awareness? And how do I identify with it? And that's what we practice with awareness, watching awareness. And that is simply what this particular guided meditation leads us into. That while we think it's very complicated to take off our personality and our past like we were taking off a pair of shoes, it's actually very simple. And it's only our minds that complicate it as a distraction for us. So I thought I would just share something about my own story this year that applies to this. So I just have a very curious mind, and I've always had sort of a desire to be at peace or to awaken to know truth from a very young age. It wasn't really till about 10 years ago that became more of a sort of a stronger desire. And being a bit of I don't know what it is. Well, curious is one thing, but maybe a bit of a perfectionist in the other. I threw myself into it for full force. So any path that seemed to promise peace, I would go to workshops and get all the books and study and practice. And then I would hear another one. Maybe it was Sufism, and then it was the Tao, and it was connecting with angels, and then it was using crystals, and then it was alternative healing, and then purification methods. So it went on and on and on. And it was such a beautiful, rich experience, and I'm so grateful. I'm sorry if you can't hear me, I'll speak up. I'm sure that these things will happen again in the future, and I'll follow more paths. But what happened with that is about this time last year, I began to hit a bit of a wall in that I began to just feel like I was exhausting a lot of these paths. And obviously, I wasn't exhausting them because you can make it your whole life getting bored. Or maybe it was just this desire to learn so much and practice so much was waning, which I'm very, very grateful for. And about this time, I began to really hear that I should turn to the Tao Te Ching, which if you aren't familiar with the Tao Te Ching, it's 81 verses. They're very short and they're very dry. There is nowhere for the mind to add stuff on to the Tao Te Ching. What the Tao Te Ching does, I know it's one of Regina's favorite, but I think it's one of the top five. I heard Gloria say last week, it's really helpful, as Barb says. It's it gets you to a place similar to the reading that Hal just read, of getting to this place where all of that junk, the mind just stops. There's no room for it there. You can't add on. And in fact, one of the things that my mind wanted to do when I started with the Tao was it wanted to, my intention was to talk about the Tao in relation to nature and create practices out of the Tao that you could do in nature, because I love being in nature. And what I realized very quickly was that was just adding. That was just adding stuff to the Tao that did not need to be added. I found myself just contemplating the Tao and sitting in this place of emptiness, this place which hopefully some of us reached while Hal was reading, where the thoughts are gone and you're just resting in what is. And then also around this time, sort of a sidetrack. It was kind of a nice story, if you will. I was drawn to listen to, and I think it was from this gathering, weekly gathering, and the fellowship meeting that happened afterwards, and Jacqueline was there, and I was sort of felt guided to watch Jacqueline's interview with Tess Hughes, who will be at the retreat in October. And it was something in what Tess Hughes was saying that was so incredibly simple of her own path. There was no overcomplication. She wasn't talking about washing herself out with water, salt water, or secret mantras that she had to learn by spending time in the Himalayas. It was just a very simple story of a woman I could relate to in sorts, because she was, she's Irish, and my roots are part Irish. And I thought, goodness, and the book is a wonderful book, by the way, Tess Hughes. this above all. But in it, she mentions about 5 books. And because my mind is such, I went out and I bought all 5 books because I thought, well, if it worked for Tess Hughes, she's now who I'm going to follow for the next couple of months. I'm going to get all the books she read. But one of the books that she recommended was, so you'll sort of see this whole tale becomes more complex but ends up quite simple again. One of the books she recommends is The Chasm of Fire by Irina Tweedy. So Irina Tweedy, if you don't know about her, she formed the Golden Sufi Circle. I might have the words in the wrong order. But Irina Tweedy, who's passed away in, 1991, she was Russian, and she moved to England and married an English gentleman, and she, who died fairly early, and she became very, she was bereft. She was absolutely heartbroken, didn't know what to do. So she decided to follow a spiritual path, and as grace would have it for Irina Tweedy, she went straight into studying with a Sufi yogi in India that someone she knew had recommended. And she gave herself up to him entirely. And he asked her when she got there to keep a journal of her time. So The Chasm of Fire is her journal of her time awakening, really, with under the guidance of this lovely Sufi master. And so I had this book and thought, well, it will tell me, what did he teach her? Was it a meditation? Was it a mantra she had to do every day? What on earth did he teach her? But it turns out it's just a beautiful story of her devotion to him. And that sort of shifts for her very quickly, a lot of what the mind is holding on to, and she reaches this place of emptiness. Eventually it takes her some time, and he sends her away, and then she comes back before he dies. What I got from this book was this really deep desire in my heart to have a teaching that was perfect for me, like very, very simple. And I don't even think I was thinking I need it to be simple. It was just, I was so drawn by this idea that she sat with someone, I'll speak up. So is anyone having trouble hearing me? Through spending time with him, that she sort of surrendered to the what is. Okay, great. And the what is, and was able to awaken. And it really captured me, and I just want to share this because it's just like a really cute sort of sharing or story, I suppose. But I'm on the subway and I was reading something within this book. It became like my Bible. I took it everywhere. And I was on the subway and I ordered this book from Amazon used, as I do all my books. And as remind you, Irina Tweedy died in the early 90s, I believe. So I was reading this book and I was sort of really moved and sort of closed it to contemplate and was quite emotional, I guess. I was thumbing through the first couple of pages, and in the second page there was a written inscription. Obviously someone gave this book to someone, and this written inscription says, "To dear Helen, with lots and lots of love, Irina Tweedy." And I could not believe it. I just burst into tears because I thought, goodness, how what a beautiful coincidence and how incredibly lovely. And it felt for me that I was kind of on the right track in this notion that I really needed to sit with someone who could offer me a teaching, because I was feeling very, very confused at that point. Like, as I say, I'd exhausted a lot of different paths. I was doing so many different practices. It never felt like enough. My meditation was never enough. I didn't feel deep enough. I then started studying to be a shaman because I thought maybe that was great. And if you've ever studied shamanism, wow. I mean, you're doing ayahuasca, you're doing herbals, you're making herbal tinctures, you're out under the moon. It is the mind. If you have a mind as such, loves it. There is so much distraction. So, yeah, I felt like I needed this devotion to a guru, as Kathy says. What happened was the mind started going, brilliant, what you need is guru. And I know myself as such that while I love the teachings of Ramana Maharshi, I needed someone who I could be with in the flesh. Typically I generally feel safer around men. I don't know why. So sort of I had these sort of ideas. But I had this idea that I'd find this guru in India, and my work called me to say, "We're sending you to India for work." And I was like, "This is it. This is brilliant. I'm heading to India for work. I'll stay on a couple of weeks and I'll find a guru there and it's all going to be wonderful." And that was my plan. And, but I had this deep prayer in my heart, thank God. And I happened to be, at a U2 concert randomly, and they showed some, videos of refugees in Jordan. And all of a sudden something inside me said, "You're not going to go to India. You're going to call your boss and tell him you're going to Jordan instead to write about refugees." And I couldn't believe this, because I thought, my God, but I need a guru, and this guru is probably in India. What the hell? It's not going to be in Jordan. The next morning I woke up, and I was staying at my partner's family, and his stepdad had a magazine, and I started reading through it, and it was a magazine edition about refugees, and I thought, well, I can't deny this. I guess I'll do this. So I'll give up India. But one of the reasons I felt okay about that was because I'd been listening to some of Muji's satsangs of this invitation around that time. And I felt like a real deep peace that I had such faith in what was inside me, that there was nothing to do, there was nowhere to go, and that whatever it was would arrive for itself, arrive for me. So I called my boss and I said, "By the way, I don't think I should go to India to work on the story you want me to work on. I think I should go to Jordan to work with refugees." And he said, "I think that's much better. Go for it." I wish I could tell you that something happened in Jordan, but nothing did. And maybe it did. Who knows why the universe took me there? And it was a wonderful experience to be with people and to understand them better and to see suffering, but also see the resilience of people and the strength and the faith they had. But because of this practice that I was doing of awareness, watching awareness, of constantly reading through this invitation and trying to sit and always question every time my identity came in to come back to this, well, beyond that, you're just observing. Helen's emotional right now, and Helen thinks this needs to be done, and Helen says this. Of just sitting in that place of peace, I can honestly say that I was not emotional while I was in refugee camps in Jordan. And if you know me at all, I'm a real watering can, which wouldn't be helpful at all while talking to people who have lost their homes and families. So, maybe in that sense, there was, a gift for me. But I already felt by that stage that the person I needed to sit down with was Muji. So in a way, everything kind of worked out, the whole sort of path. And more than just, Muji, I mean, as we know, in Awakening Together, there are so many different teachers, and we love them all. And there's just one teaching of truth, but sometimes some teachings get through a little easier than others. But what struck me more than any of it was just the simplicity and the relief that comes from this understanding that there is nothing to be done. There's nowhere to go, that it's just right here and we can touch it at any moment. And one of the most beautiful things I think that came from it is that every time the mind says, "Oh, well, okay, so now you're on this awareness, watching awareness, you need to sit down for X amount of time every day," that I can honestly now just watch that arise. The mind's doing that, and rest in the awareness of just watching it, and instead just follow the guidance. And if guidance is sit down, do it. But it's much more joyful. So one of, sort of to bring this back to this teaching, I want to read some other teachings, for you before we sort of close today, better other people's words. was this sense that, as we often talk about, I know Reverend Gloria talked a bit about this last week, or a lot about this last week, this idea that we always bring in the past with us, that the mind just has to bring the past with us. It's very, while we're in that state, we're never sort of in the timeless moment of now where the ego can't exist. So I know a lot of people here love A Course in Miracles. I've never really connected with it just because of the language, but I thought, oh, well, I want to read something because I know a lot of people do connect with it. So I opened the page, as we all do, with this intention, and of course it fell open to healing and time in chapter 12. So I just wanted to read a couple of things from A Course in Miracles about the past and how it sort of takes us away from just being in this moment, which is so simple. So incredibly simple. The ego regards the function of time as one of extending itself in place of eternity. For like the Holy Spirit, the ego interprets the goal of time as its own. The continuity of past and future under its direction is the only purpose the ego perceives in time, and it closes over the present so no gap in its own continuity can occur. So essentially what we're saying is that the ego only exists because of the past. Everything we see, and we know this from the practices in A Course in Miracles, we see only the past. What happens when we drop into this timeless moment, when we move into the awareness instead of the identification with who we are, and we begin to sort of deepen into that, is that the ego cannot exist in that moment. We break that continuity that it has. And it's this ego's continuity, the ego doesn't want that, the mind, it would keep you in time at all times while the Holy Spirit would release you from it. So another way of saying that is that when we are in that moment of not identifying with who we are, we let go of the past, because that's all past, and we rest in this place of pure awareness, of consciousness. And the ego cannot exist at the same time as that. And it also says, and this is my favorite part of this particular chapter, his emphasis is the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit's emphasis is therefore on the only aspect of time which can extend to the infinite, for now is the closest approximation of eternity which this world offers. It is in the reality of now, without past or future, that the beginning of appreciation of eternity lies. And I love the way it says that the beginning of appreciation of eternity lies. For only now is here, and it presents the opportunities for the holy encounters in which salvation can be found. So when we move into this place, which section am I reading from? Sorry, it is. So I've got the large print edition of A Course in Miracles, and it's the one that includes all of Helen's personal notes. So it might be a different page, but I can tell you that it's Healing and Time in chapter 12. And then it's the subheading number 4, Healing and Time, is within that. And mine, it says verse 30 and 31. Again, I don't know if that's exactly the same as your particular book. So for now, only now is here, and it presents opportunities for holy encounters in which salvation can be found. And it goes on to say that would you even recognize a holy encounter if you're merely perceiving it as a meeting with your own past? So that what we're saying is that when we leave outside the door with our shoes, the mind, the past, the thoughts, the expectations of the future, which are obviously just derivatives of what we've thinking about the past, when we leave all that outside, we rest in the now, in a timeless moment where all that is gone, where there is only peace, which is a holy encounter. And we are there all the time, just our awareness, our attention has left us. So as in the end of Hal's reading, says, this is your true place. And if something seems to go out, recognize it's attention only. The attention leaves the awareness as what is, becomes identified momentarily with a problem that it perceives as arising. But even that is just arising in the expanse of what is. So we can just also observe that. We can observe, oh, the attention is going out to that. But we remain in a holy encounter at all times, and indeed we are in a holy encounter at all times. So it's incredibly simple. Okay, how are we doing on time? And then the other thing I wanted to point out was that it's just an accepting of the moment, which again we overcomplicate because we say things to ourselves like, okay, I need to accept this moment. I need to accept the moment. What can I do to accept the moment? But if we ask ourselves these questions, such as within Mudji's reading or Mudji's invitation, we can simply ask, does the what is need to accept the moment? Intellectually, we can probably say no, we wouldn't. But when we're in this place, when we sort of put ourselves in a state through awareness, watching awareness, or just sitting down and following a guidance like this, or sitting with a text like the Tao that opens us up, we can ask from experience, because we're in that place, does the what is need to accept this moment? And we'd be told, or no. Does the what is need to go and journal about why it's not accepting this moment? Well, no, that's just sort of adding on. What we can do, however, is sort of be open to guidance in that moment. So in that holy encounter where the ego goes, we've let go of the past and we're just resting, even if it's just momentarily, like just a glimpse of this sort of peace of where we're not bringing our identity and we're not identifying with our person, but we're just watching awareness. In that moment, there might be some guidance that arises and says, yeah, go and journal on why you're not accepting what is. In which case, we know it comes from a pure place that is for us, for our benefit, and not from our mind. We just need to be mindful that we don't then create these habits, so that we might sort of say, oh, well, it worked once, we'll keep doing it. And already we've pulled ourselves out of this now, out of the moment. So I wanted to read just something else which I really find helpful, and this is Robert Adams' Silence of the Heart. It's in his chapter called Renunciation, which starts on page 159. Okay. If only you could learn to rely on the self, with the big S, miracles would take place in your life. So if only you could learn to just be in this awareness, miracles would take place in your life. Be in the awareness of your awareness of the what is. How do you learn to rely on yourself? You just trust life just the way it is. And it's such a relief to even feel that there's that space that we can just allow everything to be as it is. It's that simple. I'm not saying trust certain people or trusting certain conditions or certain situations. I'm not saying that, he says. I'm just saying, just trust life. Trust the substratum of all existence. Trust that place where you get to when you are in awareness, meditation, or if you follow the guidance and get to a place where you've managed to leave yourself outside with your shoes. From there, you feel such peace that why wouldn't you trust it? As I mentioned earlier, once I reached this place and saw how simple it was, I was actually very, very sick in Jordan. I had dysentery, which I didn't even know existed. But through all of it, I just kept thinking, okay, the body is going through this and I'm aware of that. But what is it that's aware of that? There is a deeper awareness. I'm not the sickness. I'm not the body. There is an awareness there. And it was such a relief. And I could trust the world, and I thought, well, whatever happens, happens. Miles away from home, and I'm on death's door, and all is okay, and everything will be well. Trust consciousness, says Robert Adams. In other words, you feel and believe in your heart that there is a power that knows the way. You came out of it. So you're that also. So you are it, you are that power, and you feel good about it. This is what I mean when I say, trust the power that knows the way. There is nothing to fix in your life. There is nothing to change. There is nothing to accomplish. There is nothing to do except abide in his power that knows the way. It's so simple, yet it's so hard for some of us. And it's hard just because we allow the thoughts to come and spoil everything. So we allow the thoughts to come and we identify with them instead of just so simply, because there's so much resistance, because the ego loves its identity and it's so juicy and goodness, all these different things you can do and what a world it is and how much we're needed. But instead, all we have to do is just, who is aware? There is a deeper awareness of what is happening. And it's that place that is the now. What can really disturb you and make you sad and make you afraid, asks Rob Adams. Only something you think may happen to you, something you bring from the past. But if you're living in the eternal now, if you exist in this moment and you do, is there a problem? There's no problem in this moment. It's only when you begin to think of tomorrow or the next week or the next week, when you bring your past with you, that you begin to think of problems. But if you learn to stay centered in the moment where nothing is happening, this moment will become the next moment and the next moment. All is well, all is well, all is well. All is perfectly well, and never forget that. Don't think about it. Don't analyze it. Just accept it in your heart. All is well, period, end. Most of us are here because we want to become self-realized. We want to experience awakening. And he gives 3 points to remember. The first is, whatever befalls your body or your mind, it is not happening to you. And remember that. The second is that all of your karmas, your samskaras, your sins of omission, your commissions, your guilt, the sinful acts that you think you are responsible for, none of these can touch you if you center yourself in the here and now. Because your past can't touch you when you're in the here and now. In other words, the here and now is omnipresence. It's all-pervading, it's omniscient, it's consciousness, it's boundless space, it's pure awareness. When you hold on to here and now, when you identify with here and now, the past is no longer valid. There is no past. There is no future in the here and now. There is I am. There is ultimate reality, and you are that. And the third point, he says, is remember, you have nothing to give up, nothing to surrender, nothing to let go of. As with our reading today, you are already liberated. There is nothing to do. You don't even have to get to a place. When we were asked the questions, did you take any steps to arrive here at the what is? No, there were none taken. Was it hidden? No. Was there some blockage perhaps to the what is? No, it's just there. It's beautiful. There is nothing you have to do. How can you believe that you have something to let go of that never existed? If you can remember these 3 points, just digest them, become an embodiment of them. That's all you have to do, says Robert Adams. You don't have to practice any sadhana. You don't have to do mantras or meditations of any kind, for you're already awakened. Again, it's just the ego that says you have to meditate, that you have to do practice. Are you the ego? What are you? Where are you going? Where did you come from? The answer to all these questions is I am, I am, I am, I am. I am that which has always been. I am that which will always be. I am that I am. I am. You are not the person you identify with. The person who goes to sleep and wakes up, goes through experiences, worries, thinks and frets, is sometimes happy. That's not you. No longer think of yourself as that person. When you get up in the morning, take a deep breath and realize the truth of who you are. First thing upon awakening, say to yourself, I am that. I am that. And rejoice. Feel the happiness in your heart. Feel your reality in the stillness, in the quietness, when there is no mind, no thoughts, no words. Who are you then? You just are. You are the what is. So I just love the simplicity of this teaching. There is nothing to do. If you're guided to do it, do it. If consciousness wants to play through you by having that experience, wonderful. It's going to play through you anyway, so just do it. Have fun. But just recognize that it's not your identity. It's not who you are. And you can return so easily through placing your awareness somewhere else on the what is. So he says here, just to close, if I say anything else, it's going to be redundant. There are just so many words, so many stories, so many teachings. Why talk about this any further? The more words you hear, the more confused you come. it's silence that's really the best for you. There are certain words, but very few words that you really have to hear. Sometimes we have to hear them again and again and again in different ways, in different formats, so that they go in. But really, it is the silence that you should always be in. And my interpretation of this silence is not that we need to go and be silent meditation all the time, or go into a cave or be by ourselves. It is the silence that comes with resting in awareness. When we can be aware of all the thoughts, but they're not there in awareness. In awareness, it's just this beautiful peace. And it's that silence that I believe that he's talking about, of just resting in the silence of the heart. So I just, sort of in light of these words of suggesting that we don't need to add anything, I gave Ken a piece of music that I thought we could play, and listen to, and kind of just bathe and take it all in and see if we can just, keep it simple and rest in the what is, and just notice if our attention moves out. Great. It's moving out within the sphere of the what is. And just staying in that place. So it's just some music words to just about. So I'm going to release the mic and hand you over to Ken for some music.
Thank you.
You can. Thank you so much for today. Thank you, Reverend Howe, for a really beautiful reading. Thank you, Ken, for being so helpful with the music and writing a few things over. And thank you, Barb. I don't want to forget to mention donations. Obviously, at the member meeting tonight, Regina will be sharing about the retreat centre and what all those wonderful donations do. So, Barb, it's very kind of just put up the link if you are feeling moved to donate to Awakening Together. The link is there for you. So I think that's it. I know I've just kind of gone a bit over time, so there hasn't been an open sharing. But if you are feeling driven to share, I know there is a weekly fellowship afterwards in a couple of minutes with Ken and Rebecca, Reverends Ken and Rebecca Gibson. I'm going to stick around for that if anyone is feeling driven to share. But otherwise, yeah, I wish you all a really beautiful week, and hope you all keep it very simple. live in the now. Remember, there's no next thing to do or undo. This very holy moment. So blessings to you all. Thank you, Reverend Gloria, for helping me out and asking me to do this week. And that's it. I'll catch you around soon. Thanks so much. Bye.
If this life is one act, why do we lay all these traps? We put them right in our path. We just wanna be free. I will not waste my days making up all kinds of ways to worry about all the things that will not happen to me. So I just let go of what I know I don't know. And I know I only do this by living in the moment, living my life. Easy and breezy, peace in my mind, peace in my heart, peace in my soul. Wherever I'm going, I'm already home. Living in the moment, I'm letting myself off the hook for things I've done. Go past, and now I'm having more fun. I'm letting go of the thoughts that do not make me strong. And I believe this way can feel the same for everyone. And if I fall asleep, I know you'll be the one who'll always remind me to live in the moment. Living my life, easy and breezy, peace in my mind, peace in my heart, peace in my soul. Wherever I'm going, I'm already home. I can't walk through life facing backwards. Tried more than once to just make sure it I was denied. The future I'd been searching for, I spun around and heard no more. By living in the moment, living my life, easy Peace of my mind.